Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're tonight's entertainment.
Take me to the volcano!
It's really called this. You have to ask for the vinegar with the mother in it.
Oh, come on. Quick.
I need, no.
Seriously.
Maybe Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't know. I don't know if we'll have enough time.
But everything's perfectly all right now. We're fine. We're all fine here now. Thank you. How are you?
Hello there, and welcome to Ready to Unload, episode number 126, coming to you live from Bayside, New York, Commack, New York, and Freehold, New Jersey. It is the Ready to Unload radio program / podcast. It is January 31st, 2013. The time is 9:30 p.m. It is Thursday. It is time for Ready to Unload with Cal and Sampete, RTU, also known as. And welcome to the program. We have a huge show. Big show. It's going to be very exciting. We have a lot to talk about. The Super Bowl is this weekend. What? Never heard of it. That small little game that they're playing. We have a lot to talk about when it comes to that. We're also going to talk about a couple of the underlying stories that go into the Super Bowl. So we're not going to talk about the game as much because everybody talks about the game. Everybody has talked about it. X's, O's, and whatnot. We're going to talk about a little Ray Lewis. And we're going to talk a little bit about the underlying theme here with concussions. There was a great article on NorthJersey.com by Jeff Roberts about former Jets and Giants and what NFL players are playing. The pain. We're going to talk about this. This is like a really interesting topic. Would you let your kids – am I going to let Wesley play football? I don't know. The NFL is going to have to change. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the PED scandal and the A-Rod. And do we care? And then I have something really interesting that I want to put to Cal about PEDs and football and baseball. And then we're also going to talk about Cal's little trip to Citi Field last night with the season ticket holders to talk to the Mets front office. Can you believe that, ladies and gentlemen? Cal was there with the brain trust for the Metropolitans. I mean, we're chock full of – and then PJ's going to be here. We're going to talk about the fun load. We're going to talk about the traditions for the Super Bowl. Our tradition for the Super Bowl is doing a show about our traditions for the Super Bowl. So we're going to do that. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. I should do this, though. We're going
to
do this.
Next episode of Ready to Unload with Cal and Sampete is sponsored by Blue Haven NYC in Greenwich Village, New York City's sports bar for grown-ups. Go to www.bluehavennyc.com for details.
Okay. So there. Now you know it. Now we can bring in the co-host of the program. I, of course, am the Sampete part of the program. This guy's the Cal part of the program. He's my partner in crime, my partner in rhyme, my partner in all things sporting and sublime. Cal's the Thomas. He can predict the future. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Brian Calneva Calpino Caliente. He's so hot. Hello, Brian.
Hi, Steve.
That was like an old school podcast intro.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted.
Well, I mean, it took 20 minutes, so.
Dude, you made me snarf with you can't do that.
I apologize for that.
Yeah, that's uncool. You made me snarf.
How's it going?
I'm good. I'm good, man.
Yeah? How do I sound right now?
You sound fine. You sound just fine.
Good.
I'm trying to FaceTime you, Bri, on your phone. So maybe we could do that so we could see each other. For those of you who don't know, while we're doing the program, we FaceTime. because we're in separate parts of the world. You know, so let's do it on the phone. There it is. Wow. There we are. How are you, buddy? What's going on? Last week we were live. This is now we're back to old school podcasting. You know, what happened? Oh, I have to call you back. Okay, we lost count.
Hell.
All right, we're off to a great start. Hey, Peach, way to vamp. Way to vamp there, Peach. Good job.
Is that better?
Here's the big guy, PJ, pop culture type of the pop culture variety by four.
Always
Hi,
ready
Peach.
With a witticism and a quick story.
Legendary for his ability to vamp and to improv. Did you study? You studied improv, didn't you? Were you a Del Close guy?
Yeah.
And that's your
exactly.
From Yes End, right?
There's no greater killer than someone who just gives that that quick answer. Yes.
Yes. Sure. Totally. I loved her. Wait a minute.
So your experience at improv? Yeah. Yes.
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 And. Yes, and. You know,
on a great
somebody,
many topics, I can be hilarious.
You know, somebody really knows a lot about improv when you're like, "Oh, are you a Del Close? You know, you from that school or whatever?" And they're like, "I love her." Yeah. Right.
I went to improv underpants when I was in Chicago.
This is improv groups. Cal, are you back, by the way?
I think I am.
All right.
Hey. What's improv underpants?
Yeah, please do explain.
We were the guys who were just a little bit too hip for the room.
Right.
So we started our own thing.
Okay.
It was a coffee house type thing, you know. We did it in
sure.
the back of the room.
Sure, sure.
It
was improv underpants? Worst name ever.
Improv underpants. The name itself, it was hilarious. People would laugh right there.
I just don't. Okay, improv underpants. That's
sure.
Boy, oh boy.
Okay.
Okay.
It's you know, Apple products do not allow you to multitask. Apparently.
Yeah, but I could. You could totally FaceTime on your phone if you're Skyping. Boy, this is really good podcasting right now. It's really good radio.
Yeah,
we can fix
it.
Tutorial. We can fix it in post. It's fine.
The cows can tape something by now. He doesn't get it. He's never gonna get it.
Try that. Try to plug into your VCR and see if we could see you better. Go
somehow.
Through the two front ports.
Cow's VCR is still flashing 12.
In my Betamax.
Yellow hole means video.
In Betamax, nice. Oh, Beta was hot. You know who had Beta? Uncle Tommy. At the forefront, he had a Betamax player. And I'll never. He had Star Wars. He was like legendary. He had Star Wars.
Top loader or front loader?
Top.
Nice.
Top loader, which means the great thing about a top loader was you can only put it certain places. Obviously.
Right. It had to be on top of everything.
It had to be. It had to be in the highest point in the room.
Right.
You had it like on top of a bookcase or something. But he had Star Wars. He was that instantly. You know, that was the first time you could watch Star Wars on a TV. Like, what was I, 10, maybe?
Right.
9?
Before then, you had to go out and get the 16-millimeter print. Wait for it.
Reel to reel.
Yeah, nobody was doing that. Cal, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
PJ just really vamped the crap out of the show. I mean, he killed it.
I'll bet he did.
Yeah. I would not be. You're a Second City guy, Peach?
No, I was asked to leave Second City.
Right.
And to go start the Third City on my own. And
you know,
to let them know when I had done it.
We talked last week during the show about how bad, you know, certain comedy clubs like have the worst names. You know, like Piss Yourself or whatever it was. Yeah, I'll be playing Piss Your Pants in Des Moines. You can make the case about – you can make the argument about improv troops. Oh, my goodness. Did I see some poorly named improv troops in Los Angeles? Like every variety of the word improv.
The assorted nuts?
Right, exactly. Just the worst name. And everybody had a sketch comedy group or an improv group. I mean, I was in L.A. like during the bang, you know? And just some of the names. Oh, my goodness. Just not good.
Like what? Can you think of any?
There was like the improv nutbags.
Improvnation?
Like anything you could do on the word improvisation or improv, there was. Like simply improv. Simprovs.
Imperfection. Look what they did. They're great.
The improvements.
Like, oh, my gosh.
It's just so, Cal, think of anything you could do with improv, and that was your sketch group.
I'm going to need somebody to name something you buy at a grocery store. Just something.
Okay,
something.
Six people that you...
A head of lettuce.
Six famous people you want to have dinner with. Okay, go. Okay. I did a little improv with a group called the Improviders. See? There you go.
Oh, my goodness.
They used to do the long-form Harold. Do you know what a Harold is, Cal?
I don't.
Pete, you know what the Harold is, right?
I'm not sure I do.
Okay.
Is it like Harold and Maude?
No. Not no. But that was good improv. See what you did there?
Harold and the Purple Crayon?
You went yes and. That was very good.
Okay.
The Harold is a long form. There are many different forms of it, but it's long. It's a long form improv. You would have like three parts, and I may be screwing this up, and somebody will yell at me. But Del Close, in Chicago or whatever, with the improv, sort of perfected the Harold, and it's exactly that. Like the first part is this game. It's like, but it all ties together. It's a long form improv. And
I feel like I could do it now.
So, yeah, I really explained it beautifully, didn't I?
And this is the Harold, you say.
Great tutorial.
How do you know all about it now, right?
Yeah.
Is it as long as this explanation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You bastards.
The Harold.
Here you go. The Harold, improvisation, is a structure used in long-form theatrical improvisation developed by Del Close and brought to fruition through Close's collaboration with... ...
So I'm understanding what you're talking about.
It's a long-form improv. Come on. So we used to do those, and when it's done really well, it's pretty fantastic.
Is it hard? It's hard to do well, though, isn't it?
It is really hard to do well.
Yeah.
I've seen it done quite poorly. Not as poorly as the explanation of the Harold that I just gave. Cal, how are you?
I'm good.
Okay, how's the family?
We're doing well.
I'm on Mr. Mom duty tonight.
Yeah, I saw you. You've got a nice little control center rigged up over there.
That's a... one of those, that's a movie now, that means way more to me.
Mr. Mom, you were saying that last week.
Yeah. In light of that, I was trying to think of movies like that this week because I was talking more with my cousin Michelle. We were doing a little post-mortem on the show last week.
We should get her back on.
She's good, right?
Would she come back on or no?
She definitely would. I think she definitely would. She was, we forgot to mention too, you know, or thank Bobby Benn for those yearbooks. I looked through some of those Islander yearbooks. They're amazing.
Fun, right? Reminisce.
It's fun. It's like walking through the park and reminiscing. Hurry, don't be late. We have a ton to talk about. Do you want to just go right to the big unload?
Sure. Well, why don't you tell me how you're doing first?
I'm great. Like I said, I'm on Mr. Mom duty tonight. We had a good time with it. You know, we got a story in. You know, the little emperor got to sleep in good shape. You know, nothing on fire. We did good.
Good.
Well, yeah. No, I'm doing great. Everything's good. I'm in a weird place with sports, Cal.
Well, this sounds like something we need to discuss.
I left you speechless. I am in it. That article, and we're going to talk about it in depth. That article by Jeff Roberts, who we tried to get on the program. But we should mention that too. We have a friend of ours, a friend of the program, is now trying to help us like book people, and he's fantastic, Frankie Girardi. I mean, doesn't he sound like he belongs working with us here on Ready to Unload? Frankie Girardi joins Steve Sampietro, Brian Calvi, and PJ Cacioppo. Hey! This podcast is getting so good. It's so nice, this podcast. I tell you that, Brian. So anyway, thank you to Frankie. He tried to get Jeff Roberts. I'm in a weird place with sports, though. I'll be completely honest with you, because the Super Bowl is this weekend. Just had the most tumultuous season about. Well, we should play. We should do this. We should do this. Shut up! You know.
So this is the big unload, right? Yeah. That's what you're about to do.
I'm ready to do it. Let's do this.
All right. Good.
Okay. The big unload tonight is brought to you by Fat. The film, the movie, by our buddy Mark Finney. You know why, Cal? Because he's almost done with it. Yeah, he's almost done editing it. He's almost done with it. Go to Facebook. When you're on Facebook, check out Fat the Movie. Search for that. Go like the page. You can see a teaser trailer there. I think this thing's going to be really good. I really do.
We've been following the progress for quite some time now.
We had Finney on the show like in May.
Yeah, it's almost a year ago.
Yeah, it's our buddy Mark Finney. It's his film called Fat, the Movie. He's got a teaser trailer up for it. Now go to Facebook and search Fat, the Movie. That's F-A-T, not P-H-A-T. Not Chris Tucker. Corbin, I'm so scared. That's my favorite, Chris. I can't say the name Chris Tucker without doing, okay, Corbin, I'm so scared.
That's a good Chris Tucker.
He's fantastic in that movie. He's really, really good. All I was saying before, and we can get to this in the fun load, was I've been trying to think of movies that hit me differently now, either as a parent or in my late 30s or whatever, than they did in my 20s. Like, they've taken on a completely different meaning. We can talk about that in the fun load.
Okay. Is that a Super Bowl tradition, though?
That is a Super Bowl tradition. I now do that every year.
You take stock in what movies mean different things to you as you're getting older.
Right.
Every year. Do you do that during the pregame?
It's usually about 3:30.
Usually.
About 3:45.
So about midway through the pregame.
Yeah.
The 6 to 7 hour pregame.
You got your wings there. All right. Got your nachos. And then I go deep inside what movies are completely different to me emotionally than they were 15 years ago. Okay. Super Bowl week, I'm in a weird place. Just had the strangest, most difficult rooting year of my life with the Jets. I don't know what to make of this team. When it comes to the Jets, we've talked about the Jets a ton or whatever. They're not the story here. The story is, then I read this article by Jeff Roberts about Wesley Walker, Bruce Harper, Brad Benson, some ex-Jets and Giants, and the pain and suffering.
Al Toon
as well, sure. But this story really highlights Wesley Walker and Bruce Harper.
Right.
And the pain and suffering that these ex-players that I grew up loving. Wesley Walker was my favorite player. One of my first favorite players in sports from any team. And gosh, Brian, it was just such a disturbing article. And I want to I want to talk about it, and I want to put it in context of, or tie it into that hit on Stephen Ridley in the AFC Championship game that really turned the tide on the game by Bernard Pollard. And it wasn't necessarily all Bernard Pollard's fault, because Stephen Ridley sort of instigated that collision. It wasn't, to me, that wasn't like a James Harrison blow-up hit, Cal.
Right.
But it was such a violent hit. He went numb, you know, he went limp on the field, Stephen Ridley, immediately went down. And after the game, you know, John Harbaugh said, that was the turning point, great football, that's what it's all about. You know, that changed the game for us. And that's a great hit, and that's what football is all about. And so within that context, look, I don't want to raid on the parade, but this article was so disturbing to me. And it brought up emotions in me, Bri, about watching football now, watching the NFL, knowing about all these lawsuits and concussions and the damage that players in the past have done to themselves, and CTE and, you know, degenerative brain diseases degenerative brain situations. And then, you know, thinking about Junior Seau and thinking about Dave Duerson and knowing that the lawsuits that the NFL has pending against it. So I really want to talk about this tonight, because that article really opened my eyes. I met Wesley Walker at a Jet event like 6 or 7 years ago, and it was such a thrill for me because I was such a huge fan, and he was such a nice, genial guy, and he was just lovely. Lovely. And to hear that this guy that I have an emotional attachment to suffers unbelievably every day. Physical and complete and mental turmoil from playing football. So there's my setup, right? I hate to be Debbie Downer, you know, with the Super Bowl week, but what does the NFL do? This is a legitimate problem.
It's a huge problem. I think they've started with their concussion awareness now. You talk about a guy like Wesley Walker, you wonder how many concussions he actually had over the course of his career that just went undiagnosed. You know, for no other reason that they didn't know how to diagnose them back then.
Yeah.
It's not that long ago either. You're only talking about 20, 25 years ago.
You're talking 20. I mean, he retired in what, 89?
He retired in 89, so that's 24 years ago.
I mean, and he's, you know, Junior Seau retired 4 years ago.
Right.
Or 3 years ago. I think that's the first point I wanted to get to, is that these guys played, even though it was only 20, 25 years ago, played in a different era with less protection and less awareness. I get that. But is it too late? Bri, has the NFL become too violent of a game?
Yes. Well, I mean, it's become very violent, and that's how they sell the league. They sell the league on violence.
Yes. And that box is open. I mean, there's no closing that box.
You know, I'm just like you. I don't want to get all curmudgeon on everybody.
No, it's not curmudgeonly. It's not.
Well, but it kind of is. In the way I see it, is as I get older, I look at it differently too. You know, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
I shouldn't say I'm sure. I would be willing to bet that a 23-year-old male that watches football, watches a montage of hits on ESPN with helmets being knocked off and guys getting knocked unconscious, and reacts much differently to it than you and I.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. I did. You take me 15 years ago, I reacted differently.
Right.
I didn't love it. That was never sort of my thing. Like, I like a big hit just as much as the next guy at that time, but it didn't bother me. I didn't think about the future of the league. I didn't think about Wesley playing football someday and if I'll let him play football. And I also didn't think about how it changes watching the game for me. I'll be honest. I want to watch football for the rest of my life. I love NFL football. I love it. It's becoming tough to watch, knowing what has happened to these guys. And yes, they signed up for it. They know that. But Wesley Walker even says in this article, I didn't sign up for this.
Here's the other thing is that, and I've always looked at it as it's always been a pet peeve of mine, but yeah. I think it's more than just a pet peeve. I always complained, you know, over the last 10, 15 years, I've always lamented the fact that nobody knows how to tackle anymore.
It's true.
Right? And to me, it's always been like, it's been an annoyance. It's been, oh, wrap the guy up. Go, you know, put your shoulder into his hip, wrap him up, pull him down by his legs and tackle. And it was always like, well, you know, they're going for these big hits to get on ESPN and they're missing the player completely, or the guy's just bouncing off of him, and then they wind up scoring a touchdown. So that part of it annoyed me. And the more and more I think about it, and more I watch it, it bothers me more than it annoys me, because these guys are turning their bodies into missiles.
Right.
You know, and NFL players today are faster and bigger and stronger than they've ever been. And you get a guy who's 6'4", 250 pounds, running at you full speed, and then he leaves his feet and launches himself at your head.
Yeah.
But that's the NFL right now, and that's a problem, I think.
I went to a Jets-Steelers game. It's probably, I mean, I think it was either before we got the tickets or when we first got the tickets. I can probably go on, like, Pro Football Reference and look up the exact game. I think it was 91. But Jets Steelers, Al Toon goes over the middle, and Greg Lloyd goes headhunting, hits him so hard in the head, leaves his feet so hard in the head, knocks Toon unconscious on the field. Then, of course, being the classy Pittsburgh Steeler that he was, stood over him and counted him out. Literally, wrestling style, gave him a 3 count, and did receive a personal foul for doing that. He didn't receive a call for the hit. That's before they had that. But he received a personal foul in sportsmanlike conduct for standing over Al Toon and counting him out. And I'll never forget seeing Al Toon walk to the dressing room, because I was on the Jets sideline and I was able to look over the rail. And I'll never forget seeing Al Toon being walked to the Jets locker room. And he didn't know what town he was in. And that was probably one of 8 or 9 concussions that Al Toon suffered in his playing career.
Well, that were diagnosed.
That were diagnosed. So I think about Wesley Walker, who I never thought of as a concussion guy, going through this. And I watched Wesley Walker's, you know, the latter stages of Wesley Walker's career. I watched all of Al Toon's career from the day he was drafted. What is Al Toon going through right now? You know, what's happened to him? And I'll do you one better. What's happened to Wayne Corbett?
Yeah.
I mean, Wayne Corbett is on Twitter now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's very active on Twitter, and he's very engaging on Twitter. He's you know, really engages with the fans and stuff. Wow, you saw that guy take hits to the head.
He had to retire because
of concussions. And he has intimated that he's never been the same. He's still not the same. I mean, this must scare the crap out of him on a daily basis. He reads this. I would hope he didn't read this article. I really do. I really do. I really hope he didn't read it, because it would scare the crap out of me. I'd just be waiting for this to happen.
But when you look at the article, I'm just kind of perusing it again right now. It's not just the concussions.
No.
I mean, it's the hits. It's the wear and tear of playing in the NFL for however many years Wesley Walker played in it. He had a problem with his spine.
Right.
That's like you're in paralysis territory when you're dealing with the spine.
Yeah. Well, that's the other. I mean, Bruce Harper, his wife can't even leave him alone.
Yeah.
She's afraid he's going to die or kill himself. I mean, it's just, what does the NFL do? Brian has to do something. Something has to. The president came out this week and said, if I had sons, I'm not sure I would let them play football at that level.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I would want them to play football. What does the NFL do?
I don't know what they can do.
It has to change. The way we watch the game has to change. Otherwise, in 5 years, you know, 8 years, nobody's going to want to play.
I mean, you have to change it at the lower levels, though. It's got to start there. Because
nice.
You can't all of a sudden, like next year, change the NFL.
But that's what they've tried to do, and it's been a miserable failure.
Right.
With the James Harrison is, I mean, culprit number one. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody should say to James Harrison, and I've wondered this for a long time, that if you were watching your son play and somebody hit him the way you hit players, would you be clapping and saying great hit? I don't think you would. You know, there's no intent to tackle. Quite often for James Harrison, there's intent to injure.
For a lot of guys.
Yeah. No, but I'm saying he's...
Well, specifically him, yes.
But then they tried to fine him, and, you know, I heard a great point the other day. I forget who was saying it. It was on one of the 800 NFL Super Bowl shows. Some NFL guy. But he was talking about... It was actually quite a salient point in that it's gotten to the point where the players don't know what's a foul anymore. Like the league has fined $50,000 here and $5,000 there and $10,000 here and $5,000. It's they don't know what is what. It's not well defined what is a foul is.
You know what I hate to even go here, but do you think it would take a marquee name being seriously injured? For the end, I don't even want to say a name, for fear of putting
it
out there. Let's say you take one of your top five quarterbacks in the NFL.
Football's Jeter.
Something like that. And a quarterback takes a hit, and is, God forbid, something catastrophic happens to him. Do you think that would change the way the NFL looks at this?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know if that prism necessarily needs to be shifted. I think the NFL realizes that it has a problem.
But what are they doing?
I think the NFL doesn't know what to do about it.
You know, there's always been talk about changing the way helmets are made.
Yeah. Or technology, right? Like, at what point does the technology become such that these sort of long-term effects, I'm not talking about, you know, a guy tearing his ACL. Okay, that sucks. Yes, we're talking about the long-term effects, the things you feel 15 years after you play, especially to do with your brain.
Mm-hmm.
At what point does the technology, or at what point is it become so desirable that the technology has to catch up?
When you watch NFL players today and you look at them, even they've been running the old Super Bowls on the NFL Network, and even 10 years ago, 15 years ago, maybe.
Okay.
And you look at the pads that these guys used to wear.
Right.
I mean, a running back used to have these massive shoulder pads.
Right.
He looked like a box. He'd walk out there, and he looked like a robot. Now these guys have such streamlined equipment. You got to wonder, how much protection is it even offering?
Right.
You know, and I know that they you know, they do that because it makes them faster.
Yes.
You know, what kind of protection is it providing?
Right.
And these guys are like we said, are stronger and faster, and they're wearing less equipment.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I want to bring PJ back in here because he just brought up a really good point about improv again. I mean, you're borderline genius. You realize that?
Bringing the gravitas I'm known for.
It's like Belushi, Will Ferrell, Cachopo.
Right.
That's my hierarchy of improv. Oh, well,
Belushi,
I wanna...
John Ferrell,
Frank Belushi,
Frank Stallone.
Because let's be honest, you're better than
that's
Jim.
What it is. I have the comic stylings of a good Frank Stallone.
Pete, you were
Yo,
talking
your
about
girlfriend's
it.
Fat. That's my best line.
Stallone used to wreck with that. That was Frank Stallone's yes end.
Right.
Right. Frank, how come in every improv scene that we do, your line is your girlfriend's fat? That's
Excuse
not.
Excuse me. Is this Green Bomb's Deli? Your girlfriend's fat.
And scene.
It's like Frank Stallone and Piscopo.
And
help,
improv.
I need a doctor. Your
girlfriend's
fat.
Right, he says it a bunch of different ways, though. Your girlfriend, fat. Yeah, good job, Frank. Why are we bagging on Frank Stallone?
No idea.
Why did that happen? You're definitely a better improvisationalist than Jim Belushi. That's obvious.
Oh.
What? I can't.
You mean to Jim Belushi. This is not an isolated incident.
You're
you
right.
Have it in for Jim Belushi.
It has happened between Belushi and I before. That's correct.
He makes bad decisions, but he's not terrible. He just makes bad decisions and sticks with them.
He commits to those bad decisions.
Yeah, like trying to revive the Blues Brothers and
well,
sitcoms
look, for that,
ABC.
For that, he should never be forgiven, ever.
Yeah, see?
That alone should not be forgiven. All right.
Come on,
look,
he played Captain Kangaroo like no one.
That was the greatest sketch of all time. That's his shining moment. That
exactly.
and the Ghostbuster sketch. But who's your favorite Ghostbuster? So you were, Pete, you were saying Chuck Klosterman has had an article. Was it on Grantland, I guess?
Yeah, maybe 6 months ago.
Did I miss this, or did I actually send this to you? Because I don't remember it.
No, I don't think you sent it to me. I think it was a Facebook friend of mine.
Oh.
And the gist of the article was exactly that, there's a secret countdown clock somewhere that's just ticking off the minutes until the NFL has to have this reckoning about head injuries, and they already know it's going to change and possibly hurt the NFL.
Right.
But it's there's already forward momentum that it's got to happen.
Well, the lawsuits alone, right? So, you know, the NFL is being sued by 4,000 or so ex-players. I mean, they can't
know that.
They are.
Yeah.
You can't just make all of those go away.
Right.
I mean, you can't literally just buy your way out. You could donate $300 million to research. You can't make all of those lawsuits go away. And they're going to have an entire generation of retiring players who have even greater problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the research, because of guys like Junior Seau or Dave Duerson, which is just, just makes me unbelievably sad. The idea of getting to the point of depression and taking your own life, but doing so in a manner that leaves your brain to be studied. So, which is what Dave Duerson did, which is what Junior Seau did. so that, you know, they could figure out what went wrong for you. So now the NFL is going to have that research as well. They're going to have to change the way the game is played. They're going to have to.
Or mount an incredibly ugly defense, a la the tobacco companies, where they fight science with science, and they get their own team of lawyers and a couple of doctors to say, this is not what it seems. Which, I mean, the PR for that would probably be disastrous, but they could do it.
I think the decision will be made by the public, by the fans.
Yeah.
Because the fans are the ones that are going to have to accept the new game.
Yeah, but will they give them the new game?
I think it's like a chicken and the egg type of thing. The NFL is reluctant to give the fans the new game until they know that the fans will be on board with it. And the fans don't know what to be on board with until they see it.
Right.
So it's like this round robin game that goes back and forth. Meanwhile, players are getting devastated out on the field.
Right.
What are the top five or six changes to the game that you foresee? You know, put them in front of me and let me tell you whether or not I'd go back to watching a football game.
One of the first changes I would make, and it's a simple one, is eliminating the Thursday night game. Okay, eliminating a game every Thursday night and giving these guys more time to recover. I mean, the NFL says that it's serious about, you know, curtailing head injuries and serious about its players' well-being, and they added a Thursday night game every week. That means that every week, and we've talked about it before on the show, and so has Bill Simmons, and so have lots of guys and girls. You can't do that. You can't claim to be concerned about your players' well-being and safety and then schedule a game every Thursday night and have teams playing sometimes three games in 15 days. You can't do that.
And want to add two additional games.
And want to add two additional games to the schedule. So that's the first thing I do. The first thing I do is I go to an 18-week schedule and I give every team two bye weeks. And I eliminate Thursday night games. Eliminate it. I'll keep Monday night games. That's fine. Okay? But I'm getting rid of Thursday night games. That's it. Thanksgiving. That's the only Thursday game you play the whole season. Because to ask these guys to play a game 3 days, 72 hours, after they've just played one, is ridiculous.
I don't think you see fan backlash from that one.
You know where the backlash from that would be, guys. It would be from the networks, because it's all about money. That's all about money, and that's disgusting to me. So that's one, number one. I go to an 18-week season, but it's... I don't add games. Every team gets two bye weeks. Give these guys more time to heal. Give them, you know, 2 weeks off in the season.
Would you give them 2 weeks off and keep the schedule at 16 games?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You could do that too.
Yeah, 16 games. That's what I meant. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I didn't illustrate that clearly. 16-game schedule stays, but two bye weeks instead of one. So it's an 18-week season, technically. 16 games in 18 weeks. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
That's the first thing I do. Or the first thing I suggest. Cal, do you have something?
Well,
this is going to lead beautifully into my last point, but
what I mean is, I almost feel like you should ban the leaving your feet hit.
Wow, can you do that?
I don't know if you can do it, but can a referee call a penalty on a guy who leaves his feet and launches himself at somebody to tackle him?
How about...
For a hit, not a tackle, not like diving at somebody's legs to try to tackle him.
Right.
I'm talking about launching yourself from 3 yards away...
Into the head.
Right in, you know, your shoulder, it's not helmet to helmet, so it's legal... But your shoulder right up into a guy's chin.
What about an ejection for that sort of hit?
Because you know what? An ejection, yeah. No, I agree with that. Because right now what happens is it gets reviewed after the fact. No penalties called on the spot. And then 2 days later it gets reviewed and the guy is fined $25,000.
Right, but there's no penalty in the game.
So, you know, and these guys that make $5, $6 million a year, that's nothing to them.
Well,
you could increase the penalty.
It's not. It's like the death penalty argument, right? It's not. It's not a.
Deterrent.
Deterrent, exactly. Yeah. If you're costing your team something, then maybe it's a deterrent.
Right.
Time off the field is a worse penalty than.
What about a penalty box? I mean, what about instead of an ejection. What about you got to play a man down for three plays?
I don't know if you could do that in football.
Look, Brian, we're talking about making big changes.
No, I know.
Right?
I know.
And really having deterrence during the game. What about a penalty box? What about you got to play a play? You know, you have a hit like that. And again, it's up to the referee's discretion, just like it is in hockey. It's up to the officials, you know, it's up to the ref's discretion what deserves a penalty. I mean, there are rules, obviously, but it's all also open to interpretation. What if you have to play a man down for a play? You know, for what's deemed an illegal hit.
I mean, that would certainly be...
I don't see that one sticking. If people are worried about injuries and you tell them to play a man down, they'll scream.
Again, though, I mean, I'm trying to think. I almost don't care what the players say because it's for their own good.
You know what I mean? Yeah. We're protecting themselves.
We're protecting them from themselves.
Right.
This is like the Greg McElroy situation where McElroy didn't want to report that he had a concussion this season because he was afraid of losing his job.
Right.
Sometimes, and again, I'm not saying any of these would be instituted or anything. I'm just spitballing here.
Right.
I'm doing my Nathan Jessup here. Okay. I'm just spitballing. Let's say we train the lad. That's one I was thinking of. I have a radical idea that I wanted to get to later because it ties into the PEDs with baseball in terms of this.
Okay.
But my next fix for the NFL would be I want to throw as much money as need be at R&D. So, like, I want my research and development aspect of the NFL to look like Procter and friggin' Gamble. Okay? I want it to look like Johnson & Johnson. I want them developing every possible safety helmet and pad and I am dumping hundreds of millions of dollars into research and development to find out, give me the helmet that takes, look, it's Steve Austin here. We have the technology. You can't tell me that they can't figure out a way to build a helmet that can withstand the collisions.
You know, our buddy Dan mentioned this a while back. We were talking about this and we were talking about helmets and equipment, and he mentioned that it's very simple. They have the technology to build a helmet with the padding on the outside. And the NFL will never do that because they sell the game on the sound of the helmets colliding.
That's right. I forgot he had mentioned that. We should mention that our buddy Dan is a neurologist.
Exactly.
So he may have access to studies that we don't have.
But if I recall...
Brains that we haven't had a chance to get our hands on. No.
But if I recall the conversation correctly, he said that the technology is there to do that.
You're absolutely right. He did, Bri.
And the NFL is reluctant to go there. Now, if the technology exists and the NFL will not use it, you're putting a lot of accountability on the league.
Well, those lawsuits are looking a lot better right now, aren't they?
Right.
From the plaintiff angle.
Yeah.
That would be another step.
Research and development.
I want to dump millions. Get me that helmet. It's going to save the game. It's going to save kids playing the game.
Yeah.
I Teresa said it 2 years ago. And I never forget it. I looked at her like, oh, you're crazy. I said, I don't know if I ever want, you know, Wesley was like brand new. I said, I don't know if I ever want, he still had that new baby smell and everything. I said, I don't know if I ever want. Right. He still got the old tagger on it. I don't know if I ever want him to play football. And I looked at it, I was like, if he wants to play football, he's playing football. And 2 years later, I'm like, you know what? I am not sure.
I haven't put my kid in it.
Yeah.
And he asks me all the time.
And you won't let him play?
Not yet. I'm very torn about it.
Yeah.
And you know what, Peach? I would have a bigger problem with letting him play at the age that Danny is, because the kids don't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, they just know hitting each other. It's probably easier for him to get a concussion then than when they at least get some acumen about the game.
Yeah, you know, well,
or,
in Jersey,
or, acumen is not the right word, but the ability.
There's a high school athlete getting ripped up, you know, on the news every week.
Hey, it's Don Bosco. Come on.
There's some, you know, poor kid athlete, you know, promising career, cut short.
That's the, I mean, you have one of the biggest football high schools in the country in Jersey. In Don Bosco. That's one of the biggest football.
Your kid go to Donnie Brasco?
Donnie Brasco.
Great school.
It's a Fugazi. That school's a Fugazi. How do you, it's like, forget about it. Like that Raquel Welch. It's fat. Raquel
Welch. Your girlfriend's fat.
Your girlfriend's fat. Frank Stallone in Donnie Brasco 2. More Brasco. More Brasco. Good one.
Double the Brasco.
Double the Brasco. No, but PJ, that's it's a difficult choice. I don't know what I'm going to do. I really don't. I don't know if the time will ever come that I'll even want to play football. But the fact that it's even a consideration tells you where it's come to. I don't know. But that what else have you got, Bri? What else would you spitball there to change the game? I tell you, I'm starting to like our play a man down for a play. I'm starting to like it.
Well, that is going to have a great impact on the actual game.
I'm sorry, you broke up there, Bri. What happened?
It's going to have the greatest impact on the actual game.
Right. Why is the third man in a fight penalty a good deterrent in the NHL? I think it's cut down on brawls and bench clearing brawls and stuff like that.
They stop guys from leaving the bench too.
In hockey, right. It's a good deterrent because it costs your team at the time.
Right.
That if you're the third man in a fight, it's a game misconduct and you're out of the game.
Right.
So you need something that's a deterrent. That's going to keep guys from launching themselves like a missile, leaving their feet at a guy's head.
To me, that's the biggest problem in the game right now.
Yeah, it has to be. It has to be.
And the accountability, if you really want to drill down here, the accountability extends all the way down to kids that are Danny's age and kids even younger than that. And the coaches at that level teaching the kids the safe way to play football, because football is not automatically a death trap.
No,
there's a safe way to play the game. There's a safe way to play the game, and these coaches at that level, it's incumbent upon them to teach these kids from the beginning the safest way to play the game.
The coaches are just dads who watch football around here. You know,
that's a good point.
What do they know?
They don't know.
Well, that's to my point with John Harbaugh and talking about that hit that way and saying that's great football. That's what football is all about. The guy was motionless on the ground. He could have been paralyzed.
Well, the other problem is that they're all desensitized to it, too. So that doesn't faze them. To see Ridley down on the ground like that, it didn't faze them. I think it fazed the Patriots. It didn't faze the Ravens.
No, it didn't seem to. And they were all fighting over the fumble. You know, they were all dogpiling the rabbit for the fumble.
You know, and then what happens is they go into the locker room after the game, and O.J. Brigance is sitting in there in a wheelchair suffering from Lou Gehrig's disease, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they think might be a result of too many hits to the head during his football career.
Mm.
So you look at a play in the game where they knock Stephen Ridley out, and then half an hour later, this man that can't even communicate in a wheelchair is delivering an address to the team.
Yeah, I think that...
There's a disconnect there.
There is. And I think that, you know, the other thing about it is that these players, I understand the way they have to program themselves. I mean, I do. I understand that they can't afford to think about the game that way. They can't. They can't afford to think about getting hurt. I'm talking about current players.
Right.
They can't afford to think about getting hurt during a game. The minute you start thinking about getting hurt during a game, you're going to get hurt.
Yes.
You know, if you ever question why some of these players are unbelievably spiritual, and hey, look, you know, that's fine. I mean, who the hell am I to judge? But I'm saying I get it. You know, you may want to give yourself over to a higher power when you're playing a game that violent and your safety is on the line. I mean, your health is on the line with every play. I know they can't think that way. But if they start to take a look at what guys, like you just said, like going into the locker room and seeing that guy in a wheelchair with ALS, that's possibly brought on by the hits that he took on the field, I think that's going to change the way they play the game. Like, that's, to me, maybe the last piece of this, guys, is how do the players at some point, the current players, change the way they play the game? Do they look at it and say, I don't want to end up like that. I can still play this game without getting on SportsCenter for a ridiculous hit. Does that happen?
Or maybe SportsCenter needs to stop showing the ridiculous hits.
That's another piece of this. That's another piece of this.
There's no easy answer,
no.
And there's no one, like, one person or one entity or group that if they change it, everything will fall in line. I mean, there's a whole host of people that need to be held accountable and are responsible for making the change.
Yeah.
And they all have to be on board with it.
Can I quote Bob Costas on it?
We should really, can we get Costas on this?
No. Costas had, you know, he was talking about guns.
Yes.
You know, you remember his infamous 90-second halftime spiel.
Which he got unfairly ripped for, but that's fine.
Right. Well, that's right. But his defense of it was he wasn't speaking about it in a way that he was saying that legislation was the answer, but rather change the culture.
Right.
And I think this is similar.
It is.
You're not going to fix it by just rewriting the rule book. You have to change the culture.
Yep.
And you can't change the culture overnight, though. That's the problem.
No, you certainly can't. But you read more articles like Jeff Roberts wrote on NewJersey.com, and you see the effects. You actually see the effects on your favorite players when you were growing up. You know, 85, Wesley Walker. God, I loved Wesley Walker. And to see the player, to see the effects on people that you know, I care about vicariously through a football team. But I care about. To see them suffering like this for my amusement is a little too, you know, like gladiators and the Romans to me.
This is a little too Roman for me right now.
It really is.
Let him die.
Right, it really is. Let him run a post route. It amuses me.
special box seats at every game for Joaquin Phoenix.
Somebody's been a busy little bee. That's. I'm sorry. He stinks in that movie. Stinks.
I know.
Has anybody, speaking of movies that I've watched in my lately, that I've caught lately, that I'm like, oh my goodness, that, whoa. It's so ridiculous. Is that why it stinks?
I think so.
I remember thinking it stunk at the time. And then he was like nominated for an Oscar. No, somebody's been a busy little bee. Like, he played it so wonderfully Faye, which was great.
Right.
And he's in love with his sister and stuff. Like, I mean, I get it. Speaking of being extraordinarily Roman. You know, but oh, I just thought he stunk in that. That's me.
Wait, what are you talking about?
In Gladiator.
I hate that movie.
Go on. You hate that that movie in its entirety.
Yeah, I almost got into a fist fight with Tommy B over that.
You almost got into a fist fight with Tommy Balls?
Yeah. Because he came in, he's like, this movie is incredible. I said, that movie was terrible. Laughable.
Why is it that our buddy Tommy B has, at one time or another, gotten into a fight, almost fisticuffs, with every one of us about different movies?
He takes them very seriously.
He's apparently very passionate.
Right. Mine was Tenenbaums. We almost got into a fight about
that.
He did not like it.
No, there's no way.
And you know what he really didn't want to hear? He didn't get it.
No, like anybody wants to hear that.
I didn't even say it. He headed me off at the pass there.
Yo,
and
I didn't like that.
I don't get it.
It went over my head, right? I'm the dummy, right?
Right, that's exactly right. He gave me a preemptive. Oh, I guess I don't get it, right? Is that my problem?
Oh.
I don't know why we're putting this very educated, erudite guy from Westchester.
Super smart.
And putting him in Queens, but we'll do it. It's fine.
Because he gets a little ruffled for movies. Just movies.
He does.
If you disagree on music with him, it's just like, well, we disagree.
Yeah, he's much more flaccid about music. He really is. Or much more agreeable. Like, I don't like that, but that's cool.
Yeah.
World time
for
on
movies, he's an absolute
idiot. Yeah, idiot. Tom, I love that movie. Well, then let's fight.
Right.
What are you talking about?
I'm going to have to punch you in the ribs.
Right, why are we wrestling? About the Untouchables. What happened here?
Girlfriend's ugly.
Your girlfriend's fat. Why can't you get the line right?
I've changed it up.
Third time you messed up Frank Stallone's big line.
It's improv.
It's improv. Oh, so you're saying some nights she was ugly, some nights she was fat?
This is all we had. Elijah's girlfriend's goiter.
They all involved his girlfriend, at least.
At least.
Right. Yeah,
your sister.
Right.
Who works with your sister.
Yeah, no, you can get into fisticuffs. So I'm glad you didn't like Gladiator. All right, one last thing on the Super Bowl, which, by the way, I think is going to be a great game. I love this matchup. I hate these teams, finding it very hard to like either one of these teams.
Hate them both.
Yeah. But I think football-wise, X's and O's-wise, it's a great matchup to me. Just because, you know, you have, as Bill Simmons said, you know, Willie Beeman in Colin Kaepernick. It's just, and their offense is rolling. The Ravens' defense maybe has the ability to stop them. The San Francisco's defense is great, but the Ravens have proven to be a high-powered enough offense to put up some points and have some weapons. I think it's a really good matchup. I really do. I like it. How about you?
It's a great matchup. I have not been able to get into any of the build-up to it this year.
There are so many unlikable characters involved.
Oh, on both sides.
Chief example is Ray Lewis.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I can't take it.
It really has become a Ray Lewis reality show, the playoffs.
Yeah. Did you see Amani Toomer's comments?
I know you were talking about it, but I didn't see what he said.
He just said it's ridiculous. He's making a fool of himself and a spectacle of himself, and it's such a me first thing.
Oh.
Like, you know, for the Toomer was like, when you're dancing or when you're getting in the victory formation at the center of your field and, you know, what do you call it? The 50-yard line. You're in the victory formation when they're in the victory formation on offense. Dude, you're making it about yourself.
Yep.
And he said, you know, when it comes to the God thing, like usually when people are that big, make that big a spectacle of their their stuff, it's for show.
But you want to know something?
And it's hypocrisy. Like what Toomer's point was, if you're going to be that big with God, at least have a clean background.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, you can't just cite God every time somebody brings up your involvement in the stabbing of two people. I love how indignant he gets. Just absolutely indignant. Like, how dare you bring up the stabbing of two people that I may or may not have been involved in? That's God's concern.
Right.
What?
I live with it every day. Do you?
Yeah, well, not as much as the two dead guys.
That was my favorite line. I live with it every day. You don't have to live with it every day or something like that.
But yeah, right. But live with what, Ray? I thought you didn't do anything.
Yeah.
So what do you live with?
Oh.
I can't take it.
But the media eats it up. They eat it up. I mean, when he was down on the ground after they won the AFC Championship game, and there was at least 50 reporters around him.
Right.
At least.
You just texted. You're like, I can't take this.
Are you kidding me with this?
Yeah. It's enough. Oh. It was a great Deadspin article yesterday called the Hater's Guide to Ray Lewis.
Uh-huh.
And it was just wonderful because it called out the hypocrisy and stuff like that. And it talked about the idea, and this is something that does bother me, and I don't want to get political or religious about it, but it does bother me a little bit in sports. And that is, you know, you don't get automatic redemption just because you now believe in God.
Right.
Like that's not the purpose. It shouldn't buy you an automatic redemption card. That's not.
Hallelujah.
Jeff Buckley.
Hey, you know who else is unlikable? Jim Harbaugh.
Oh.
How is it possible that Jim Harbaugh is so much more unlikable than his brother?
It's well, look,
his brother, possible?
His brother's not super likable either. But Jim Harbaugh is a self-described Neanderthal who wants to embarrass his competition and the things that he was saying. I was watching like a Real Sports interview with him from like 2 years ago when he first got the job with the 49ers.
Uh-huh.
And they were playing each other on Thanksgiving night, the Harbaugh brothers. And he was talking about, like, just what a jerk he is. Like what a complete jerk he is. I'll tell you what, if I was his wife, I'd be worried. Just saying.
He's a jerk. I, you know.
If Rex Ryan said half the things that this guy said, they'd ride him out of town on a rail.
Yep.
Rex Ryan says, I think we're going to win the Super Bowl. I think we got a great team. And he's a jerk, loudmouth, blustery jerk, idiot that the league hates.
Buffoon.
Fans around the league hate.
Right,
hate.
He's a clown.
Hate the Jets. The Jets are a laughing stock. And Jim Harbaugh's a jerk. Like, not a good person at all.
Oh, I mean, we don't know Jim Harbaugh, so...
I'm just going by the interview that he gave where he is a self-described Neanderthal.
Right.
Who doesn't like people. And, you know, gets in fights with other coaches. I mean, not that we can really defend Jim Schwartz, but still. You know, gets in fights on the field, you know, rips on his own players. Like, he's a jerk.
Constantly jumping up and down and crying about calls.
Ah, he's just, but he's beloved.
Well, he's maybe by San Francisco fans. He's not beloved by everybody.
Around the league, ask a Jet fan, who would they rather have as coach right now? Or ask a Jet fan, whose antics bother them more?
I'm a Jet fan. Why don't you ask me?
I'd rather have the guy who gets in a fight with another coach than a guy who is unbelievably respectful of other coaches and who's never said a bad word about another coach.
You know what? Harbaugh doesn't have a thing for feet.
But she doesn't have a tattoo with Alex Smith's jersey on his half-naked wife. So stupid.
You know, I have a problem with Colin Kaepernick also.
Oh, do tell.
I have a problem with him. I think he's been around for 3 minutes. and he's a little full of himself, this kid.
He's Willie Beeman. He's the new generation. He's the next model of quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I know. I don't like him.
I don't care for that.
I feel myself aging as I'm sitting here saying it.
The gray hairs that just...
Right. Like, excuse me while I go put a cardigan on and put my bifocals upon my nose.
Out of my way, I have an ARP magazine to go pick up. And a Social Security check to cash.
Now hand me
my walker.
He just rubs me the wrong way.
I see it.
Right?
You know how I feel about reading articles about, like today, you know, I think it was even Peter King. Could be the next greatest, you know, could be the best quarterback in the game.
Yeah.
Can we wait 10 minutes?
Why don't you ask Cam Newton to contribute to that story right? That you're writing?
Hey, how about Andrew Luck? Is he just sitting on this? Like, I thought I was the best quarterback in the game.
Robert Griffin III, just 3 weeks ago. He was the guy.
Colin Kaepernick.
You remember him?
Can go down as one of the best ever. That's what I mean. We're doing this? We're really doing this.
You know what's great is at least the media is not prone to hyperbole or anything. Yeah.
No, they're not desperate kingmakers at all.
Well, but in all walks of sports, when you hear, like, so-and-so is always one of the best ever, or this team is going to be one of the worst teams in the history of the game.
Right. They have to do that. It has to be absolutes.
Slow down.
Let's just do this.
Fine.
Can we play the game?
All right. You know what? Give me a pick.
Well, wait. I have another problem.
What?
Well, again, this is near and dear to my heart, but I want to bring it up because we have a podcast.
Okay.
Did you happen to catch Abindejos? How do you say his last name? Brandon Abindejo. The linebacker for the Ravens. Yeah. Can we look that up? Because we've really just destroyed my point.
I'm going to do it right now. Hold on. I'm going to look it up right now.
I
have to know how to spell it first?
Guess I really just crapped all over what my point was going to be. Raja Bandejo? No.
What about him?
He made some comments about same-sex marriage at the Super Bowl during press week.
Oh.
And he's been very outspoken in favor of same-sex marriage and it being a civil rights issue. And Abindejo, thank you. Took a lot of grief, you know, during the season for it. And, you know, Chris Klui, the punter for the Vikings, rushed to his defense, but came to his defense and they sort of took on the Maryland senator who criticized him for voicing his opinion.
Yes, I remember that earlier this year, right?
Right. Well, during Super Bowl week, he's voiced his opinion again. He's been asked about it and he's said how he felt. And he has been ripped to shreds for using the Super Bowl to voice his public opinion.
Was he? Here's the thing. Was he asked about it?
I don't know if he was asked or if he volunteered it. That's not my point.
Okay.
My point is, I'm not sure why that's not okay, but it's all right for Tim Tebow to do an anti-abortion commercial during the Super Bowl.
I can tell you exactly why it's okay.
Yes.
They bought that ad time.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
I would be willing to bet that if Abindejo bought some ad time for the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
they'd let him do whatever he wanted.
You think so?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. So if he is asked about this at the Super Bowl, which I believe he was, and he voices his opinion, he's using the Super Bowl as a platform for him.
There's a significant piece of information that needs to be clarified here. Was he asked? If he was asked, then nobody should rip him at all.
But buying the ad time or not, are you not still using the Super Bowl as a platform for your political opinion?
Well, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Nope. Just checking.
Maybe if he did it with his mom, he that would be a little bit better.
His mom would have to be gay, though.
Oh, well, listen, I mean, they love the players and their moms with the Campbell soup. You know, there's always the chunky soup, the players with the moms cooking soup for the teammates,
yeah,
in the commercials.
Sure.
You know, it's never really their mom either. It's an actress.
What?
Did you know that?
I am shocked.
You know, you make fun, but I was surprised.
I am a Neho. Ravens, here's a good headline. He's got a little tiny head, by the way. It was weird.
Well, it's like a peanut.
Ravens Brendan Iabandejo awaits son's heart surgery, advocate for gay marriage rights. Wow.
But while he's waiting for his son to have heart surgery, he decided that he'd just, you know, take up the cause.
By all appearances, Iabandejo is living the dream. He's about to play in his second Super Bowl this time with his platform to speak his mind on causes ranging from gay marriage advocacy to a push for ALS research. And his son needs a heart transplant.
His son, Amadeus.
Yes. Amadeus Prime.
Amadeus Prime.
That's magnificent, by the way. Put that on the list.
Amadeus Prime.
Amadeus Prime San Pietro. I can't.
Oh, it just rolls off the tongue.
Can't pull that off, Kenny.
Love it.
All I'm saying is I there are other instances too. I'm not just talking about Tim Tebow's anti-abortion commercial.
Right.
There was another instance that I wanted to cite where a player used the Super Bowl as a platform for his or her beliefs, and nobody seemed to have a problem with it. And I think that the problem is what Iabandejo's platform is, not necessarily the fact that he's using the Super Bowl for it.
I don't want to get too deep into this.
We
topic.
Never have in 3 years. I just wanted to bring it up because it was bothering me.
No, but my point is that's a conversation for another day. That's starting to gain some traction again. Openly gay athletes.
The first, right? Who will be the first openly gay athlete?
Well, who openly, right?
Right.
That, the key word is openly.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm reading a little bit more about it. I had, I had read about it previously before bringing it up, obviously. But he was also responding to Chris Culliver's homophobic remarks that he made the other day.
Right.
Intimating that gay players wouldn't be welcomed in the 49ers locker room.
Oh.
When he said, "We don't got no gay people on the team," quote unquote, Culliver told the radio station during Super Bowl media day on Tuesday. Quote, "They got to get up out of here if they do." End quote.
Likeable.
Good night, everybody. Good job.
What about Ahmad Brooks and Isaac Soboaga?
What now?
What
two
have
more guys
say?
On the 49ers. They're like,
who is this?
Hello?
Is this thing on?
Where's PJ? Is he eating again?
They did one of those It Gets Better videos.
The bullying?
Oh, the
Yeah, aimed at gay youth, and now they're saying they never did it.
They're denying doing it?
Yes, they're becoming It Gets Better deniers. It's like this. There is a narrative starting about the 49ers being very homophobic.
Yeah, well, I'm just reading Chris Culliver's apology. Quote, unquote.
Apology. Air quotes.
Oh, I'm sorry you're gay.
But your mother's ugly.
I don't. Wow. He really. Wow.
Is he missing it? Is he not getting the point here?
Culliver, in a radio interview with Artie Lang, said he has no desire to have
Artie Lang.
Of course. No desire to have a gay teammate. Chris Culliver, I'm surprised.
Yeah. Wow, that's good. Instant impression.
So then this guy does so many drugs. In a Super Bowl week that has been dominated for the first time by stories about deer antler spray, which we're going to get to.
Are we?
Culliver has become the first player in Super Bowl history to use the forum to make anti-gay comments. He's a trailblazer. I mean, this is on Jackie Robinson's birthday. Congratulations. This is his quote, Cal. I can't. Oh, boy. the preface to "We don't have any gays on the team" was, "I don't do the guys. I don't do that." "We don't have any gays on the team. They got to get up out of here if they do. Can't be with that sweet stuff." End quote.
Again, was he asked his opinion on this?
No.
Did he, you know, Mr. Culliver, what do you think the chances are this weekend? Against the Ravens.
Are you guys going to play more of a cover two, or do you think you'll be maybe man on the outside?
They got to get up out of here. I'm glad you asked me about the game. Because you don't want none of them up in there.
Chris, you're going to have to be physical with the Ravens wide receivers. Speaking of being physical with wide receivers, they got to get up out of here. This is his apology, Cal. You ready?
Yeah.
Last Wednesday, after the comments circulated, Culliver – I'm reading this from the New York Daily News, by the way. Let's cite it.
Okay.
Culliver offered a bizarre half-hearted apology distributed by the 49ers. Quote, "The derogatory comments I made yesterday were clearly this is him. Clearly this wasn't a prepared statement. Because he went from, "You got to get that sweet stuff out of here," to "The derogatory comments I made yesterday were a reflection of thoughts in my head, but they are not how I feel." Culliver said in the statement, "It has taken me seeing them in print to realize they are hurtful and ugly. Those discriminating feelings are truly not in my heart." Further, I totally believe he wrote this. "I apologize to those who I have hurt and offended, and I pledge to learn and grow from this experience."
Was that said through his spokesman, Kirk Cameron and Victoria Jackson?
Oh, you didn't tell me about this part of it. When Artie Lang asked Culliver to reiterate his thoughts about welcoming a gay teammate, he says, "Nah, can't be. In the locker room, nah. You got to come out 10 years later after that."
Really? 10 years later? This is Artie Lang.
He added that he realized his comments were especially offensive to many people in San Francisco and the Bay Area.
Yeah, I know. Well, we were getting to that, right? Could there be a worse city for this guy to be making? I mean, good luck on the team bus back home. Can't wait till you go get coffee.
Jim Harbaugh says, "I reject what he said."
That's his comment. I reject what he said.
Never happened.
Well, Jim, he said it. You can't just close your ears and wish it. I reject that. No, I reject that.
Well, that's what he's done all his life. Is he just rejects what he doesn't like, and he moves on.
This reminded me of there's a great picture on the Daily News gal of the Daily News. I can't even look at it with a straight face. Don't worry, folks. I'll put this up on the episode page. There's a great picture of Jack and Jackie Harbaugh, Jim and John's mother and father, screaming. They're both screaming, holding NFL Network microphones. Screaming.
Are they real photos?
Accompanying this story. And it says, "Jack and Jackie Harbaugh, parents of head coaches Jim and John, get fired up to make the Super Bowl a family affair." I got to send you this picture. It's magnificent. They are screaming. They look like they are shouting down a gay rights activist, maybe. I don't know.
I think that might have been what they were trying to imply.
That's the implication here. And I'm emailing this to you right now because you have to see this. And which reminded me, the first time I saw Mr. Harbaugh watching his sons do battle on that Thursday night game, I'll never forget turning to my brother and saying, "Who brought the great Santini?" Get the sneaking suspicion that if one of the Harbaugh boys didn't do what their dad wanted, they went to bed without dinner. Like, that looks like a guy you do not want to piss off.
You probably don't.
You do not. You do. Wow.
He wings the basketball off the head.
That's exactly right. Who brought Duvall in the great Santini?
You're going to cry?
Gee whiz. Are you going to cry now? You're going to cry?
Cry now.
Sorry,
hey, Dad.
Dad.
I reject that.
Wow, geez. It looks like Thanksgiving dinner must have been a hoot at the old Harbaugh household. You call these potatoes? Ugh. Get this out of here.
Do we know if there's a third Harbaugh that we don't know about? Like Cooper Manning?
Right. Poor Cooper Manning.
Right. Is there another Harbaugh that just is, you know...
I don't know.
They're going to find somewhere that's just completely disgruntled with all the attention his brothers are getting.
Right.
Frank Stallone Harbaugh.
Frank Stallone Harbaugh.
Is there a Roger Clinton Harbaugh here? It's going to go on Arsenio. Like, can we get him on Ellen? Talk about, or Dr. Phil, while we're at it. Talk about his feelings about his brothers.
That guy. Don't get me started on that guy.
Dr. Phil?
Yes, a Sopo.
Oh, boy. I can't even talk about that story anymore. It's just so ridiculous.
All right.
We'll wait till he's a Jet, then we'll talk about it.
All right, who's going to win? Who's going to win this game?
Boy.
Now, let's get back to the game.
Right. I think the 49ers.
You think the 49ers are going to win? They're favorite?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I think they were... I do. I'm not sure if I can necessarily. To me, they're very similar teams. You know, you just got the email, right? Is that magnificent? Oh, Peach, where do you see this picture? So
they are outraged about.
They are outraged. Jack and Jackie Harbaugh are outraged. She looks like she's been through some battles, huh?
Finger pointing their fingers.
I can't wait to post this on the episode website. I can't wait.
Like, what could they be responding to in that manner?
They're doing, just to describe this to the people, they're doing press for the game. Like, they're sitting on like an NFL Network set next to each other. There's a little table between them. They have NFL Network microphones, and they look like they are trying to filibuster a bill in Congress. Like, this is an outrage. Like, Jack Harbaugh looks like he's saying, this outrageous, erroneous. How dare you say that about my children? So good. I like the 49ers.
All right.
In this game, I think you can't stop Colin Kaepernick. You can only hope to contain him.
Is that your key to the game?
That is my key to the game.
St. Pete's keys to the game.
Yep. Not the best color man in the game for nothing. NFL Network is calling. Hold on. Who's that on the other line, Cal? Oh, I'm sorry. That's the NFL Network. They'd like me to come and break down the big game.
I feel
no,
like
no,
this
it's
should
Jim
be...
Belushi. It's Tim Belushi online.
That's Frank Stallone.
Like, this should be
something about my girlfriend.
It's a graphic.
Your girlfriend's a pig.
Like an animated set of keys just jingling. Sam Pete's keys to the game.
Worst Chiron ever. Who do you like? How much you bench?
I don't like either team, but if I gotta pick a team to win, I'm gonna go with the Ravens.
Really?
I think the Ravens are gonna win this game.
I am on my way to, if the 49ers should win, I will have gone 10 of 11. On my picks in the playoffs.
Is that straight picks?
Yes.
That's pretty good. Which one did you not get?
Seattle and Atlanta.
Oh, wow. 30 seconds from that.
Yep.
All right.
Yep, Seattle and Atlanta.
Well, good luck.
Well, you know what? I'm wrong. I picked the Patriots to win over the Ravens.
Baltimore, yeah.
I did. I would be going, if I get this, I'll go 9 of 11. That's not bad.
That's pretty good.
Still solid. I stand by that. Okay, can we get to the A-Rod PED stuff real quick?
Please. Real quick, though, because I don't really want to spend too much time on him.
This was more your thing. I only had one point on it. But I wanted to get your – do you think that he did it? Do you like Gio Gonzalez's liar, liar, pants on fire defense from the Rocco Colombo School of Typewriter Maintenance?
Listen, I don't give any of these guys the benefit of the doubt anymore, especially a guy like A-Rod who's already admitted to using it.
Okay, so great article by our guy, Matthew Callen on Amazing Avenue,
yep,
about the difference between Ray Lewis being accused of using PEDs to get back on the field from his torn tricep or bicep or whatever it was, and A-Rod trying to use HGH to get back on the field and perform at a level that he previously did. And his basically, I don't know if you caught that article, Cal, but the gist of the article was, it's about imagery. Okay, the two sports are about imagery. When baseball is based, you know, there's 100 years of history in baseball that's not recorded. All it is numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Because you couldn't watch it on TV, and you couldn't listen to it on the radio, and it's basically just all about numbers. And those numbers are held in a sanctimonious or sanctimonious is the wrong word.
That's not right.
Sanctity. There's a sanctity there involved with those numbers that if you toy with in baseball, you're robbing the game. You're cheating the game. Whereas in football, the entire history of the league in the last 50, 60 years, is recorded. You can watch all of it. So you can see how the players, the numbers don't matter. It's about the players on the field and being on the field to play. And you can see how they've changed, and you can see the numbers. You know, all you know about Babe Ruth is that he hit 714 home runs. You don't know how he did it. You didn't get to see how he did it. So that number, there's a sanctity to that number, that if you toy with that, it's not good.
Well, and then I guess it goes to the fact that baseball numbers are more sacred than any other numbers.
Yes.
In any sport.
And therefore, if you're using a performance-enhancing drug, whereas with football, it's about getting on the field and playing. That's the gladiator mentality that baseball doesn't have. You know, you didn't earn it if you used a PED to get yourself on the field in baseball. I like that point.
Plus, people don't like to be lied to. Well, and when these guys come out and lie, and then they're found out to have lied or to have hid the truth,
yeah,
they go, public perception just goes after them that much harder.
Right. I wanted to take, though, this argument a step further, and I want to see what you think of this, between football and baseball and performance-enhancing drugs. And maybe this is a personal thing, and I'll see if you feel that maybe it's apropos for a larger majority.
This is going to be like a Carlin thing? You're going to do like a baseball-football thing? I'm so excited. It's not, is it?
I wish it was.
I'm going to be let down.
I wish I had... In my, you know, the talent that he had in his little pinky, I wish I had the ability to verbalize. No, it's not. A series of landmines strategically placed in the outfield.
In football, you do steroids. In baseball, you do HGH.
Right. That's exactly right. I think, and have always felt, that it is just, and this ties back into our previous conversation, I have always just accepted that football players have used steroids. Because, and there's a little part of me that's always said, you know what? Good for them. In the sense that, what you know, for those reasons. Not good for them, obviously, but I could understand it because of the nature of the sport that they played. And so I think it's just accepted. Because there's no, to me, there's no way you can quantify how much that's changing their performance. They're on a field with, like, is Ray Lewis, how much is it helping? Whereas in baseball, it's seen as cheating. In football, I never saw it as cheating. It was just something that I felt has always gone on, and it's like, well, whatever you got to do. Does that make sense? Do you know what I'm trying to say? I'm trying to say that I think there's a general perception that it's accepted in football because it's been happening for as long as it could possibly happen, and these guys are huge behemoth men who are crashing into each other like a car crash 65 times a game, and if they're taking a steroid to make that easier on them physically, then so be it. Whereas in baseball, you don't need it.
Unless everybody else is doing it.
Right, but you don't physically, like I've almost felt like with football, you almost physically need it.
But you don't.
To compete.
You don't. If nobody's doing it, then you don't need it. You don't. The game would be different. The game would be more probably what we want it to be.
It would be safer.
It would be safer.
This is not a I'm not condoning its usage. I'm just telling you my feel. Like Ray Lewis did HGH, okay. You know, A-Rod did HGH, well, that's cheating. Like I expect it in football. It doesn't surprise me.
I know.
It's never surprised me. And that was my last point. I want to hear what you think of this. My last point on how the game can change in football is let them do it. Find a way, and this goes back to my research and development point, find a way to make the drugs like HGH work for you. Work for the players. Make them safer. Make them, you know, research and development into how you can use HGH or, and again, this is medical stuff that's way over my head, but what I'm just trying to say is find a way to chemically help these guys while they're playing. Because it is a different sport than baseball. And I'm not talking about finding, you know, letting them do steroids. I'm talking about the recovery powers of HGH or that are inherent in HGH. Find a way to make that safe.
I think you got to be careful with that because you're talking about drugs. The drug that they're taking, putting in their body.
Yes, I know.
You know, so that might be, to me, I'm not comfortable with looking for a way to make HGH safer so that players can take it.
Well, it's not, I know it sounds ridiculous, but my point is it's not necessarily HGH. It's trying to find something that is chemical that you could give to football players that help with their recuperative powers. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Find a way to use it. If the players are going to do it anyway, and they're going to, especially with HGH, and then what's the other one? HIH? No, there's another. I mean, I'm not talking about the deer antler stuff. I'm just talking about, you know, human growth hormone. There was another growth hormone, IGH maybe or something like that. Find a way to use it and to regulate it and to use it for the player's benefit. So if they're going to do it anyway, at least, you know, it's like the argument about legalization, right? You can legalize it and you can tax it.
Right.
Find a way to use that to your advantage. That's all. It's just a thought. I didn't say it was a great one.
No, it's a good thought. It's I'm not comfortable with it.
You think that's too big of a Pandora's box to open?
A little too radical, yeah. I think, I think what's become clear is that whatever you try to ban, they're going to find something else.
Yes. No, I think that's abundantly clear.
You know,
I think it's abundantly clear that the players will find a way. It's the same thing with, and this was my last question on the PED stuff with baseball, is do you care anymore?
I don't.
I mean, do you really care anymore?
I don't.
I've said it to you before, and I think we're in agreement on this. And that is the only steroid that bothers me with these guys is HGH, because that's cheating the game. They're on the field when they shouldn't be.
Right.
That's why, again, Andy Pettit. Yeah, I wish Andy – somebody tweeted the other day, boy, it's really unfair of Andy Pettit to hog his get-out-of-jail-free card for steroids. But that's the one that bothers me. But as far as the other P, like, who cares? Who cares? Enough now. Just, who cares?
I agree, but people don't like to be lied to.
Yeah. Well, and the fact is, it's A-Rod. You know, Gio Gonzalez came out and said, no, I never did it. I didn't even know that guy. And people were like, oh, okay, cool. See you in spring training. Pitchers and catchers, 10 days.
Because Gio Gonzalez didn't previously admit to team.
Exactly. Because Gio Gonzalez is not A-Rod.
Right, but A-Rod actually admitted to using performance-enhancing drugs. And now here he's under a cloud of suspicion again. He gets no benefit of the doubt whatsoever. Then he goes and hires an attorney.
Well, yes. A very, very, very prominent attorney, yes.
So?
I don't know. Hey, look, pitchers and catchers are in what, 10 days, 11 days?
10
days, Monday, right?
12 days.
Yeah. You last night got to go to the season ticket holders for the Mets, of which
yes.
your brother-in-law is, I believe?
Yes.
A Q&A with Sandy Alderson, J.P. Ricciardi, Paul DePodesta, and Rico. the Mets front office hierarchy, you got to go.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. I got to go last year, too. This is the second time that they did this. And basically what it is they sit up at the front of a room, like a panel, moderated by the great Kevin Burkhart, just does a fantastic job. Everything he does, he really...
I think Burkhart's great.
He takes everything well.
He takes so much crap online from Mets fans.
I don't know why.
Because Mets fans want to hate everything.
Yes, they do, and we'll get to that. But basically, it's Kevin Burkhart moderates it. He introduces the hierarchy, the brain trust, if you will, and then they take questions from the fans, from the audience, season ticket holders. These are full season ticket holders.
Right.
It's a perk. It's an amazing Met perk that they get by you have to renew your season tickets by a certain date in full. And it becomes a perk. What it also seemed to be was license for these fans to air their grievances.
Becomes Festivus.
He did it last year, and it was relatively benign.
It was the first year they did it last year, too, right?
Last year was the first year, yeah, because before that, it would have been Omar Minaya and crew. And I don't know how that would have went.
Which I might have paid the freight for season tickets just to sit in on Omar Minaya hosting him, sitting on a panel taking questions from Mets fans.
With Tony Bernazard. Jerry Manuel. Can you imagine?
Oh, boy. Yes, I can.
Oh, that would have been entertainment.
That would have been magnificent.
Yeah, so last year it was relatively benign. Last year it came, they did it a lot earlier in the off season. They did it like in November last year,
And it was right around the time that they were negotiating or not negotiating with Jose Reyes.
Depending on who you believe. Right.
Right. So there were some questions about that last year. So this year, I thought it was very curious that they changed the timing of it to do it much closer to spring training, much later in the offseason. They probably thought that they were eliminating any possibility of controversy because, you know, by January 30th, everything's going to be set. We'll have our team set. You know, it'll be a nice get-together right before spring training. Little did they know they wouldn't have an outfield. So there was a lot of questions about that.
Right.
You got a question, how were the Mets in on Justin Upton?
Right.
And he said the Mets were not in on Justin Upton because we did not consider putting Zach Wheeler or Matt Harvey
in the
deal.
And that's who they wanted.
And that's who they wanted.
Right.
He told a really interesting story, and I think he mentioned this on the radio too, but I didn't hear it originally. They were trying to get – he wouldn't mention the team or the players, but it was pretty obvious. There were two prospects from a major league team that they were trying to get. Did you hear this story?
He said it when he was on with Francesa, but go ahead.
He did. Trying to get for Dickey, and they wouldn't even consider it. Wouldn't even consider it. The day they made the trade for Darnell, that general manager called Alderson up and said, I'll give you both of those guys for Darnell.
Right.
So that tells you something that they picked up a pretty good prospect.
Yeah. Let me ask you something, Bri.
Yeah.
Met fans are a beleaguered bunch. That's one way of putting it. They are unhappy. They are beginning to question Sandy Alderson's pleasure cruise, his plan. What's the plan?
Can I address
sort of thing?
Can I address that for a second?
Yeah.
He brought that up because somebody wanted to know at what point are the Mets going to stop putting an inferior product on the field?
Right, which you said was met with applause, right? That question.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of hooting and hollering. Like you tell them.
Mob mentality.
Right. So, Alderson had a very good comeback. And he said that he's not getting any younger. I'm not getting any younger. There's no 10-year plan in place here. I'm not going to be here in 10 years.
Right.
I want to win.
Yeah.
It was a little Leon Hess-esque.
Yeah, just with a clue.
Right. No, but the tone of it. Well, you know, I'm not going to be here forever. I'm getting
I'm entitled to some enjoyment out of this team. Yeah.
And he went on to talk about how they get criticized for their pursuit of certain players. Why would you go and bring a guy like that into this team? You're going to be horrible anyway. I think he was referencing Michael Bourne.
Yeah.
You're going to stink anyway. You're not going to win. Why are you going to bring this player in? And his response was, well, first of all, how do you know we're not going to win?
Right.
Because we might.
Yeah, I like that. I love that.
And second of all, just because all of the money's coming off the payroll next year doesn't mean it's going to be – you're going to. And I think he talked about – maybe it was Rico that brought up, you know, walking up and down the supermarket and just pulling everything off of the shelf that you can because now you got all this money.
Right.
That's not the prudent way to spend your resources. And if they see somebody that's going to help their team in the future and they can sign somebody now, like a Michael Bourne – now they've locked up a center fielder.
Right.
And next year, when they have all of these resources to spend, they don't need a center fielder.
Right.
They don't need starting pitching. They don't need an infield.
Right. Now you're tweaking as opposed to having to make wholesale buys.
But not only are you tweaking, you are maximizing the amount of resources you have for just a specific area.
Right.
So you can really go out and get the best player that you can.
Right.
It also doesn't mean if you've got $50 million to spend next year that you're going to go and spend $50 million.
Well, that's the great thing that Met fans don't want to hear.
And that brings me to my last point about this is he brought something up early on, and it was when the team makes moves, they take very much into account what the public perception of those moves are going to be.
Really?
Yes.
That's surprising to me.
And he talks about, and you could, knowing the way that Sandy Alderson talks, I'm not going to be able to do it justice here, but you know how when he delivers a message in a very subtle way where he's smarter than everybody that he's delivering this message to, and he's making it very clear. But he's so smart that the people that are receiving the message don't get that he's kind of taking a shot at them.
Right.
He said that when they make moves, they have to take into consideration whether a Met fan understands that it's part of a plan. And that the move is not just made in a vacuum, and that there might be other pieces that surround this move that they're making.
Right.
So now,
I love it.
Fast forward an hour later, and we're in the elevator walking out.
Right.
Crowded elevator. There's like, 12, 13 people in the elevator. And I'm right at the front, and behind me I hear, "You can't run a team in New York like it's in Kansas City. It's just not going to work." "Yeah, you're right. It's not going to work." And I looked at my brother-in-law, and he looked at me, and we just grinned and shook our head.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I said, "Remember what he was talking about the average fan getting it? They don't."
No.
The average fan does not get it.
Here's a takeaway for me, Bri, is that, Met fans lament up and down. They don't know the plan, and they don't know, what's going on, and Sandy Alderson's on a honeymoon cruise and stuff. This is 2 years in a row out of the three that they've been running the team that they had an open panel with season ticket holders that was reported on, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the press couldn't be there to know. Can you get more transparent than that?
Now, obviously, they're not going to divulge trade secrets.
Well, nor should they. But I mean, how much more transparent do you want them to be? They let fans ask them questions.
And fans were asking them everything.
Yeah. Like,
here was a good question.
I mean, but you said it before. Like, could you imagine that with Omar Minaya? Well, no. They never would have done that.
Yeah.
Because they weren't that transparent. He's telling you exactly what the plan is.
Another question came up.
That's unbelievable.
I give the Met fans credit for having the onions to stand up to Sandy Alderson and ask them these
right.
things.
Right.
But I give the front office even more credit for the way they answered them.
Yeah.
Why would you put a AAA team in Las Vegas?
Right, you said that. Yeah, what was their answer to that?
All right, so, well, if I back up, Di Podesta had just gotten through, I'm going to back up even a little bit further. The question to Di Podesta was, how come the Mets can't develop any outfield prospects? They seem to be able to develop pitching.
Right.
But ever since Daryl Strawberry and Lenny Dykstra, those were the two names he brought up, they haven't been able to develop an outfield prospect. How come they can't do that? Di Podesta's answer was, well, we are focused on pitching. That's the organization's philosophy. And he admits that the pitching is ahead of the outfield, of the offense. Doesn't mean that they're not trying to. And then he referenced, Brandon Nimmo. They
right.
spent their first-round pick on him. But he talked about how the pitching is what the team is developing. That's their organizational philosophy, is to develop pitching. And they believe that they have probably the best pitching prospects, pool of prospects overall, in all of baseball.
Wow. Okay.
So that's what he says.
Might not be true, but I like them believing it.
May not be true. So now it's followed up by a question. Well, if that's the case, if pitching is such a priority, and really all you can, and you're so focused on developing top pitching, why would you put a AAA team in Las Vegas, which in the Pacific Coast League is a haven for offense?
Right, because of the altitude.
Why would you do that? And this was great. And it was actually something that I hadn't even thought of. You put some – when you are developing pitchers specifically, you want to get them ready for the major leagues. And guys like Zach Wheeler and guys like Familia and guys like they mentioned Rafael Montero, who was one of their big prospects last year. These guys have had a relatively smooth ride through the minor leagues. Thus, if they were to be promoted tomorrow to the major leagues, they are not prepared to deal with any adversity. They don't know. They don't know what it's like. And then you bring somebody up, and he gets racked in the majors. And now what? Oh my God! You know, his entire life, all he's known is success.
Right.
And the first time he experiences adversity is at the major league level.
Yeah, not good.
I feel like that. So maybe, and they didn't choose to put the team in Las Vegas. That's the other thing.
Right.
Sandy Alderson. They asked him, and he answered the way he answered it was. He says, "You ever play Old Maid?"
Right.
Kind of like this is what was left.
Yeah.
So we were stuck in Las Vegas.
They had to leave Buffalo, and Las Vegas was the only thing left on the table.
Right, but you know what? Maybe it's not such a bad thing because you're going to put a Zach Wheeler in AAA in Las Vegas, and he's going to have to deal with balls flying out of the ballpark.
Right.
He's going to have to adjust, and he's going to have to face that adversity. And you know what? Maybe it makes him a better pitcher. Maybe it helps his development. And that's the type of thinking.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I didn't even consider that. But it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. The other thing I would have thought of is that it makes those lesser offensive players somewhat more attractive to other teams.
Right. And conversely builds the confidence of your hitters.
Yeah.
Who are now going to go out to the Pacific Coast League like a Travis d'Arnaud.
Right.
But put up big numbers.
Yep.
You know? So it was an intelligent answer. And then the other big thing was they talked about advanced metrics a lot.
Yeah, you had said that this proprietary system and...
Yeah, so Dee Podesta was talking about the fact that the Mets have developed their own system of advanced metrics. This is something that the Mets... created.
I love this.
Insert joke here.
Right.
Right. Only the Mets.
Only the Mets.
But.
Oh, this is the kind of thing that, like, if Francesa ever got wind of this, or, you know, I could actually put that to, like, 65 to 70% of Mets fans.
Well,
right
now. And I'm looking around the room as he's explaining this, and basically the Mets had a very informal research department. Leading up to this year. And this year they've decided to make it a full-blown department within the organization.
Right.
It's research. It's R&D, like you were talking about. It's research.
I love it.
Right? And it's just, you know, a whole bunch of little mini Moneyball guys running around following this proprietary system of metrics that the Mets have developed.
That's so great.
And Dee
Podesta, oh, man. So many... fans' heads would explode.
That's my point. Dee Podesta is explaining this, and I'm looking around the room, and there's, you know, there's Joe fan number one with his hat and his pins on his hat and his Met jersey with the 86 on the back, and he's just staring at him like, what about my outfield?
What does proprietary mean?
Research? Instead of setting up a research department, why don't you get me a left fielder?
Right.
You know?
It's so great.
It was interesting.
Proprietary.
Metrics.
What are we doing?
Let's go metrics.
Are you an accountant or a general manager?
What's nerd?
Then it's back to that, right? We're going to lose the live feed in a couple of minutes here, so before we go, thanks to Blue Haven, our sponsor. Check out Blue Haven. BlueHavenNYC.com for all the specials. Go watch the big game. They're having a big Super Bowl party there. It's going to be really awesome. Huge screen TV. Go see Megan Dearman and Rory at BlueHavenNYC.com for details. So thanks to them for sponsoring the show. Also, we'll be back next week. So check us out. Go to iTunes. Download the podcast. Please subscribe. And check out www.rtusports.com as well. For episodes, you can get the Windows version there if you like nice. And enjoy the Super Bowl, everybody who's listening live now. we will move on with a little overtime. We won't go too far, but a little bit. A little bit overtime. Well, it sounds like it was an extraordinarily interesting day, and I or evening, and I just love the fact that everybody cries about not knowing the plan. These guys could not be more transparent. And it could not be, and again, it continues, like every, these little things keep continuing to confirm my belief that they're trying to build the Giants. They're trying to build the Giants. And they don't,
weeks ago.
And yeah, but they don't care about the outfield. I mean, they care.
That's not true.
They care.
Not true.
That's not what I mean.
No, well, based on what they said, they definitely care about the outfield. He said they put together a list of outfielders at the beginning of the offseason.
Right.
Did he say this on the radio too?
No. I read this. He may have misjudged the market a little bit.
They put together a list of outfielders, and one by one, he had to keep crossing them off.
Right.
And at one point, like, he had Upton and Hairston, and he says, like, in a matter of 6 hours, I had to cross both of them off.
Right.
And now there's only one left.
But I still don't have any problem with them not giving Shane Victorino 4 years and $40 million.
And they brought that up, too. Rico brought that up and said that was a case of Boston probably overextending themselves a little bit.
Right. Like, I don't have a problem with them not doing that. I would rather have an outfield of – when have the Mets ever had a good outfield? You know, in 2006, they had a they had Carlos Beltran, who was an all-time outfielder for them. Okay, their best outfielder ever, you could argue, right next to Strawberry.
I don't think you can argue.
Yeah, I think he was better than Strawberry was.
Yep.
And that was it. You had Sean Green in right field.
Cliff Floyd.
You know, you had Cliff Floyd on one leg in left. You know, you guys like, you know, who? Andy Chavez was the starting left fielder in Game 7 of the NLCS.
Steve, who was the outfield when they made it to the World Series in 2000?
Exactly. I said this to Cerrone the other day. I said, now we can begin the arguments about which one is worse. Because they made it to the World Series with an outfield of Benny Agbayani, Jay Payton, and Timo Perez.
And Timo Perez replaced Derek Bell.
That's right. So I'm not saying that this outfield is going to be great. Would I like to see them get a legitimate outfielder? Absolutely. But I'm not overpaying for Cody Ross.
But would you pay for Michael Bourne?
Now, yes.
If it doesn't cost – now, and he could not have been more candid.
As long as it doesn't cost them their first-round pick, that's
it. If it costs us the 11th pick in the draft, we're not going to do it.
No
chance. He said – that is the best pick in the history of baseball that could be given up. Because prior to this year, the first 15 were protected.
Right. This is the first year. It's the first 10.
Right.
And they had the 10th worst record in baseball.
And you can't get better than the 11th pick. So they would have to be prepared to give up the best pick in the history of the draft.
Right. The best compensatory pick in the history of the draft, we have to give it up.
Right. He's not going to do it.
Not for Michael Bourne.
He also said right now the point is moot. So that leads you to believe that they're pretty far apart in negotiations.
Right, that Bourne is not coming here, which is fine. It's fine. It is what it is.
But
okay?
they want him.
And I know why they want him. You made the great point about, you know, that their pitch to him, Alderson said their pitch to him was, you know, in 2004 they were really, really bad. They got themselves a center fielder. And in 2006 they were one game away from the World Series.
No, they said
things can change quickly.
2004 ended very similar to the way 2012 ended.
Right.
So.
And things can change quickly.
Right.
He's not Carlos Beltran, but.
He's not Carlos Beltran, but he's also not Colin Cowgill.
Right. My point is this. They're talking about building the organizational philosophy is pitching. You know, you can also trade that pitching for an outfielder.
You could, but
yeah.
They didn't want to trade.
But I'm not talking about trading Wheeler or Harvey, or I'm not talking about trading these frontline guys. I'm talking about the more depth you build up in the organization in terms of pitching, the better your prospects are of trading for an outfielder.
Right.
I mean, the A's have done it for 10 years. You know, this is something that the Giants did it. What do you think they traded for Hunter Pence? What did they trade for Carlos Beltran?
Yeah.
You know, this is the organizational philosophy, being pitching and developing that pitching. That's what they got to do. I like it.
If you look at it from a smart perspective, you have to like it.
If
you look at it from an emotional perspective, you're not going to like it. I get that.
I disagree with that. I think if you look at it from an emotional perspective, you should like it too, because there's a plan in place.
Right, but I get the guy that is looking at Kirk Nieuwenhuis as my starting center fielder and is frustrated that they didn't do anything to improve the outfield. I get that. I can understand his frustration or her frustration.
But can't you, to that same person, say, what would you want to do? Go give $39 million to Shane Victorino?
You can ask that person what would they have wanted to do.
Yeah, and they're going to tell you, go sign Josh Hamilton. I mean, it's just...
I don't know. Look, it was clearly a salesy type thing because they had a captive audience.
And it should be.
You know, it was a marketing thing. But you know what? They sold me. I'm ready. I cannot wait for baseball to start.
And it's a marketing thing that, you know, fans clamor for and fans cry for, and there's no transparency and there's no, you know, and then you do that and, you know, even if it's a marketing effort or not, who cares? It's the right thing to do.
They're not going to be able to win no matter, until they actually win on the field.
That's
right. They can't win.
That's right. All right.
They're not going to win until they win.
Let's, Peach, you want to do a fun load? Nice or what? Should we do our annual... Our annual Super Bowl traditions?
Hey, what are
celebrity news.
Oh,
okay. This is the best celebrity news I've read.
Did not see that.
You know
coming.
The actor Jason London? He was in Dazed and Confused.
Yeah.
He's got a twin, too,
yes.
Right?
Jeremy and Jason?
Jeremy, yeah.
Giambi or London? Who are we talking here?
So London.
Right. One was on Party of Five?
Jeremy.
Jason Giambi.
The Giambi boys had a
Was that a
cameo.
Special episode? Of,
yeah.
Hey, it was in San Francisco, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There you go.
It was a PED episode.
Right.
And there were no gay characters on Party of Five. So.
Scott Wolf wanted to use steroids.
Jason Giambi came and talked to him?
He said, just say no.
Jason London got arrested. Well, he got beat up by some bouncers, and then he got arrested. So,
and then he got, wait, talk about insult to injury.
It's a bad night.
So the headline is Jason London arrested, actor was brutally attacked, says his rep. And then there's a typical mugshot picture of him looking pretty beat up. But it's the line under the headline that is awesome. Actor Jason London denies defecating in cop car during arrest. I didn't do it.
Telling you right now, I did not poo.
That was not my dookie.
It's got his agent written all over it. Listen, Jason, we got to make you relevant again. Here's what you're going to do.
Right. Poo with a cop car.
Get yourself beat up by a couple of bouncers, right?
Right.
You're going to get arrested.
Wait, I'm going to what?
No. Hear me out. You're going to find yourself in the back of a cop car.
In Arizona.
I want you to have a bowel movement. In the back of that cop
Why
car.
Why can't I just do like a Hallmark movie or something?
Yeah, listen, this is going to blow up TMZ. Everybody's going to know Jeremy London now.
I don't know if this is a good idea.
You're Jason. I'm sorry.
I'm Jason, by the way. Did you advise Jeremy to do this too?
No, he's fine.
Now, he's going to be in a movie with Clooney next week.
Right.
He starts shooting with Angelina Jolie.
I don't think this is a good idea.
Have I ever steered you wrong?
Yes, you have. This reminds me of the time you wanted me to masturbate at that mall. It was not a good idea.
One of them was in Mall Rats. I'm not sure which one.
Jason.
I thought that was...
That was Jason, too?
That's Jeremy. I can't...
You're so good at this.
At least the Giambis, like, you're able to tell them apart.
That was Mark Mulder.
That was Mark.
He's in Mallrats.
Zito. Wasn't Zito in Mallrats? Wait,
Hatterberg pooped in a cop car?
Jason Lee was in Mallrats. Everybody.
Jennifer Jason Leigh?
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Come like on, give that me, Jason Leigh.
Give me a... do you really?
Yeah.
He's got the best lines in Almost Famous. There's another movie I was going to say that I look at differently for some reason.
Why?
Well, that's what I want to talk about with
you. I don't know. I think the musical aspect of it.
Hold that thought for 1 second, because I have a piece of trivia.
Oh, okay.
All right. See if you can get this.
It's Jason London.
Classic rock song that everybody knows. It's not obscure. Classic rock song that stops kind of right in the middle, and they play Chopsticks, and then the song picks up again. Can you name that song?
Blinded by the Light?
There it is. Very good.
They play Chopsticks?
And right in the middle of the song for no reason.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Wrapped up like a deuce?
No one knows.
No one will ever. Well, there's the Springsteen version of that song.
Right. Manfred Mann.
Manfred Mann did not have the lyrics, but still wanted to do it. This is a good look inside the heads of Manfred Mann. We don't know the words, and let's stop it 3 minutes in, play Chopsticks, and resume.
Great job by them. So Springsteen is the original?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
With more
lyrics, predictably.
Yeah, right.
I didn't know that song was about being down and out in Jersey, though.
Yeah, I had no idea. I had no idea it was about teenage angst in Jersey.
Is that a construction worker on the Jersey Turnpike working at night?
That's the one.
It's on Asbury Park, I think, that album.
I never owned a Springsteen album. Ever.
I know, we've heard.
I don't buy that. You didn't own Born in the USA?
I did own Born in the USA. You got me.
I thought so.
Darn it. Darn. I was going to ask you, Peej and Cal, if you guys have thought of movies that you think of differently, as I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, no, this is it. This is our fun look. This is a good topic.
Well, the reason I threw Almost Famous in there is because I watched it again recently, and I remember the first time I watched it being a very Cameron Crowe experience for me, and having liked his canon of films.
Sure.
And then the last time I watched it, it changed completely. Now it's just a movie, and it's okay. But I don't have the glorification that I initially associated with it because I liked Cameron Crowe so much. It's like
I find that with all Cameron Crowe movies, that the second time through, they're just okay.
Except Say Anything.
Well, here's an interesting question. The first time you watched it would have been 2000, right? 13 years ago?
I think when it came out, I saw it in the theater.
2000, 2001. So
sure.
12, 13 years ago, you were still heavily involved in music.
That's true. Also true.
Does that change your perspective on the film now, 12 years later?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But it was never the musical aspect of it. It was the Cameron Crowe aspect of it. You know, my glorification of Cameron Crowe is gone. But Jason Leigh has all. Jason Leigh steals that movie.
He's terrific.
He steals. Your looks are becoming a problem, Cal. We're going to have that conversation eventually. When we get the T-shirts, the RTU T-shirts made.
Right.
And, like, you're in the foreground, and, like, I'm all the way in the background, and we have our backs to the camera, me and Peej. We're going to be like, it's okay, I'm only the lead singer.
It's going to be, yeah, by design.
I'll say it. Your looks are becoming a problem. I think my fantasy team next year is going to be the Jeff Beebe Band.
Nice.
No, but there's got to be a couple of movies that really have changed dramatically. Go ahead.
Breakfast Club. I watched Breakfast Club, and
as a parent,
and started to see Mr. Vernon's point of view.
Oh boy.
you know he does that long monologue
yep.
where he scares the heck out of Judd Nelson.
Right. Yeah.
And I understood his motivation for the first time ever.
Wow. That's a great call. That is a great call because I can totally see that. I could totally see watching that movie again and being like, you know what, Mr. Vernon?
Mm-hmm.
All right, dude.
And there's a lot of John Hughes movies now where I start to understand the parents, realize how well the parents are written.
Right.
I can watch Home Alone and, for Catherine O'Hara.
Right.
I'm not even watching it for hijinks. I'm looking at the mom and going, oh, man, she's great, you know?
You're not watching for hijinks?
not the Macaulay hijinks.
Poker.
Those already.
Poker Jamboree.
And, of course, Candy.
I miss John Candy.
My perspective on Candy hasn't changed.
Nope. I miss John Candy. I'll tell you one that had changed for me throughout the years, speaking of Candy, was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Because I have traveled and had all those, situations, stranded, car breaks down, this guy, the plane, trying to get home. Like, I've actually lived that a number of times, having lived in a bunch of different places in the country. And so I always love that movie, and then it has, a special, I'm always traveling during the holidays or whatever, whether we're going to Texas or we're going here. It has, a special, it's reached a status that's legend for me because it's just so true. And then to come home to the family. I haven't been home in years. Cal, you got to have one.
PJ kind of stole my thunder a little bit with The Breakfast Club because I was going to see 16 Candles because when I first watched 16 Candles, I did not have two daughters.
You didn't?
At least I didn't. No, I did not.
No.
Now I do, and I watched that movie, and I'm thankful that it's not 1984 because that was some wicked times back then for 16-year-old girls.
Mm.
But it's also, it's also 2013, and these kids are growing up fast. So
your reckoning is coming.
Oof, I think it's upon me.
How about that guy never worked again?
Which one?
The guy in 16 Candles.
That wasn't Matt Dillon?
No. No.
It's the other guy.
You never saw him again. He's a classic. What was his? First of all, he was 36 playing 17. I don't remember ever seeing that guy again. I think I even had this conversation eventually with Teresa.
Was that Jake Ryan?
Jake Ryan. That's right.
Played by Michael
Schofield.
He had
to have been in other things.
I'm sure he was in other things.
He was. He was in Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken, Vision Quest, and Mermaids.
Yeah.
He has no credits after 91.
That's extraordinarily prolific, except not at all. What's his real name?
Michael Schofield.
Oof.
Born in 1960. Good call.
Yeah, so he was in 80. He was 24, right?
He was 24.
Right.
23, 24, playing 17.
Was he playing 17? Yeah, I guess he was playing a
devastatingly high handsome.
He was playing a senior, right?
He did have that look.
He did have that. Was that Matt Dillon? You just want to put Matt Dillon in everything.
I thought it was Matt Dillon.
You love that Matt Dillon.
What's not to love about Matt Dillon?
Now, Kevin Dillon, a whole different story.
Oh.
He was like the thinking man's Matt Dillon.
He's Jeremy Giambi in this equation.
He's Frank Stallone.
He is Frank Stallone.
Your girlfriend's all right, boys. Disgusting.
Let's
I don't think that was it.
It's disgusting. Oh, all right, let's wrap it up here.
You Where's really brought it tonight, Frank. That was a good turn.
PJ, final unload.
The disc of the week, or the download of the week, depending on how you do it. A Japanese guy by the name of Tomita, T-O-M-I-T-A, did a synthesizer version of Pulse of the Planets, the long classical piece, all done on synthesizer. It's mind-blowing and amazing. It's called Tomita's The Planet. Go get it.
No, good. I'm glad you didn't do anything obscure. Cal, final note.
I think they're all gone now. After 7 years, we say goodbye to Dirty Rock tonight.
Hate you so much.
Season finale, series finale of 30 Rock. Great show over the last 7 years. One of the more underrated shows, I think, of the last 15 to 20 years. And it's a shame to see it go. We're going to miss it.
Absolutely. And my
rank
final...
underrated things?
Sure can.
Not now. Next week. And my final unload is this. Enjoy the Super Bowl, everybody. I think... I will, but I beg the sport that I love watching to fix this. Fix this. Start to fix this. Start to fix the fact that it's uncomfortable to watch football games because of the injuries that these players are suffering. Fix this. I beg you. Fix this. And lastly, Cal, Islanders 5, Devils 4.
Do you mean first place Islanders?
That's correct. We'll see you next week, everybody. Thanks, Peach. Thanks, Cal.
Thank you.
Your girlfriend's a cow.
Did you say your girlfriend's a cat?
A cow.
Stallone, terrible. She's a cat. That's the worst improv ever. Good night.